time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 636 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week it's another great crowdfunding doubleheader as I talk with Madeline Holly Rosing from Boston Metaphysical Society on Kickstarter and Jordan Plosky from Zoop.gg. It all starts off with the return of Madeline Holly Rosing, who has a crowdfunding project on Kickstarter for her special edition hardback for Boston Metaphysical Society. Here's how this latest edition is described. An ex-Pinkerton detective, a spirit photographer, and a genius scientist battle supernatural forces in the late 1800s Boston. We discuss what this new edition of this successful comic series is about, who the characters are, and explore what else is going on with the society. Be sure you back this project before it concludes on Thursday, April 18. Then everything wraps up with my interview with Jordan Plosky, one of the driving forces behind the high-power crowdfunding website Zoop.gg. He's one of the leaders of that site, and they're gathering investors for Zoop.gg via Republic.com. Here's that description. Zoop is an all-in-one crowdfunding and e-commerce platform. They're raising funds so the site can continue its strong support of comics creators while also expanding their focus to other comics-related items and groups. Be sure to check this out and invest as soon as you can to help this crowdfunding generate even more support for the comics industry. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they both have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. An ex-Pinkerton detective, a spirit photographer, and a genius scientist battle supernatural forces in late 1800s Boston. And it's great to welcome back to the podcast Madeline Holly Rosing, who is the writer-creator of this successful franchise. How you doing, Madeline?
I'm doing great, Wayne. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
It's good to talk with you, but boy, we got so much success to talk about with this already. First thing we got to talk about, this project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, April 18 at 2:05 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. People get mad at me because I don't say that soon enough, so I have to do that. So let's see. Well, you have a goal of $10,000, but it looks like you rocketed right past that pretty quick. Do you remember how quickly you guys did that?
Yeah, we were fully funded in 12 hours.
Wow. That's superb. Now, right now, you're staring at $25,000, which is a great place to be. By the time this posts, hopefully you'll be there and other good things will be going on. Now, we should mention, too, that this is also a project we love for Kickstarter.
Yes.
It's mentioned, the title is Boston Metaphysical Society Volume 1 Special Edition Hardback.
Yes.
And that's a good way to find it.
Yeah, this is the first time we've done a hardback for Volume 1, and it's going to have, obviously, it will have our original six-issue miniseries, which I know our regular followers already have, but what's different about it is that it'll have a bonus 10-page story, which will be exclusive to this hardback, to this edition, plus pinup art, which probably most people have never seen before, and what I like to call a couple pages of schematics of weapon designs from Granville's workshop. So that was really fun putting that together.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, as we're sitting here, and this is recording early, of course, all six stretch goals have been accomplished, have been reached. So, wow. Congrats on that, too.
Yeah, thank you. So anyone who pledges to any reward will be getting 18 additional indie comics. And if you pledge to the hardback will now come with a gray satin ribbon bookmark and a foil stamping on the cover. because that cover screams foil stamping. So I was pretty much going to do the foil stamping anyway, whether or not, you know, we made it. So, because it just needs that.
Now, we should talk about, you've got this is something unique you've got going in this campaign. You've got special detective metal business cards in brass, copper, and black stainless steel on different reward levels. Talk about that. Where'd that come from?
Well, a long, long time ago, a woman mentioned to me that, you know, we should have sort of like a membership to the Boston Metaphysical Society. And so I remembered that. But I also remembered how much people enjoyed the metal bookmarks we had done before. Mm-hmm. So I decided, well, let's have a membership card, but a metal version. And then it has appropriate tiers. I mean, you can buy the set as an add-on if you like, but there's also, you know, graded tier levels for, you know, the brass level, the copper level, and the black level. And so I just decided to have fun to do that.
That's great. Now, the people have to put their own names on there, right? You don't put them on.
No, I don't put their names. It just says special detective on it.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
And that's it. No, engraving everybody's name on it would be a little onerous.
Oh, people might like that, but oh, I can imagine that would be a horror. Having to get it on there and spell it right and all that stuff. Oh, that would be terrible.
I'm not going to go there. No.
Now, it says the art is by Alejandro Lee. Hasn't that person done art for you in the past?
Absolutely. Alejandro is terrific. He has done several of my lapel pins and all of the bookmarks, all the metal bookmarks. He's pretty much my go-to guy for all the metal stuff because he does such an outstanding job. And he knows the series well. We've actually known each other for quite a long time. And so it was actually his idea to use the owl. Because the steampunk owl was our original logo way back in the day.
Wow, very good, very good. So that's 3.5 by 2 inches. So that would fit in your wallet and stuff like that. So you could do those kinds of things.
Very good. Oh, yeah.
Now, one of the things I really like about the Kickstarter page is that you have posted the first pages from chapter one.
Yes, the first three pages. Yeah.
Which is great because what that does is that gives you an idea. And, of course, it sets up certain changes in the team and stuff like that.
I mean, since this is the original six issue miniseries, we have the original team of Samuel, Caitlin, and Granville. And as you know, I've done sequels, and the team has expanded over the years. But yeah, this is the original.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm kind of curious because how long have you been doing the Boston Metaphysical Society? How many years?
11 years.
Wow. Okay. So this has been going for quite a while. I'm just sort of curious because you did mention that probably those faithful members have probably already got this and stuff, but they don't have the hardcover edition. Of course, I love hardcover editions.
Yeah, they don't have the hardcover. And people have been asking me about the hardcover for a while too. So
And of course,
figured it was time.
It's also a good place to have people jump on. Getting the first story. So that's a good time to go back and kind of bring everybody up to speed that way.
Yeah. And it has, a lot of cool extras.
Mm-hmm. You've got a foreword written by Charlie Stickney. You've got all kinds of good things going on. Wow. The thing I love about this franchise is it's so prolific and so many wonderful things. I'm in the audiobook, which I loved. I thought that was really great.
Oh, thank you.
It was fun to. I listened to that through. Was it Kimball or? I never could remember the name of the audio thing where I got it from. But anyway, it's really good. I mean, I thought that you did a great job, and of course, as I remember, we talked about before. You put all the cast and helped the whole thing all come together with the audio. That was kind of fun. And so, why don't we kind of let people know? If you can get a one level that I thought was really good, it's the entire Boston Metaphysical Society. Let's see. Let me get I want to get the name of it.
What is it? The New to Boston?
There's one that has everything that you want to get. All things BMS.
Oh yeah. That's the large, that's the biggest here. Yeah.
It's $190 for that. Let's see. 10 people have taken that. That's good. And you've got volume 1, volume 2, Mystery at Pike's Peak, issues 1 and 2, the coloring book, the Prelude print copy, the novel, all seven Society pins, boy oh boy, PDF volumes 1 and 2, the CD of the Ghost Ship, and what's an FD of the Ghost Ship?
Oh, the flash drive.
Flash drive, okay.
So the flash drive, yeah.
Wow, and then you've got the short story, The Underground, and the short story, The Abide Monsters. Wow, and your name, of course, goes on the Kickstarter. Thank you, Wall.
And includes domestic postage.
Ooh, wow. So that's a good place to jump onto. So that's great. Now, estimated delivery is going to be June.
Yes.
You got 40 people left can still jump on and get that. So, wow, that's you've done a great job of planning ahead, which is always the case. I think you do a beautiful job when you do these Kickstarters. Well, which leads me to ask, how many Kickstarters have you done now?
13.
Wow.
You're I mean, even good. Though it says at the top that it says 12 created, mm-hmm. One was created under the Queen of Mercia banner for the audio drama.
Oh.
So, I've actually done 13.
Wow. You've got to be really good at this by now. I mean, what do you do differently now? Now that you've done in your 13th one, what happens differently for you now than when you started? I'm sure you're not refreshing as people do. Like, what do you do?
Well, I actually did a couple things differently on this campaign that I haven't done before. I actually hired someone to do the reward graphics, which I hadn't done before, because you'll see here's the full, after Mystery at Pike's Peak, you'll see here's the full list of rewards, and then you have all the reward graphics. I'd never used to do that before, and I figured it was time. I mean, you would see the rewards, but not like graphically. Mm-hmm. And also I did better headers. There's just some, graphic stuff that I did that just to up my game, make it look better.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. I've got allergies here. So,
oh boy.
Yeah, there's just like little things just to up the game.
Yeah. Well, it looks great. I mean, the Kickstarter page looks really, really good. And I have to say, I think the graphics you have definitely are really high quality and just great stuff all around. So I hope you feel better soon. And I hate when allergies hit people and stuff like that. They didn't come from the eclipse, right?
No.
Okay. So I got a huge kick. I heard somebody was saying that the eclipse was the result of climate change. And I was like, no, they've had eclipses before there was ever climate change. So I was like, no.
No.
So it's the old
not
science.
How that works. Not how that works.
Science always makes me laugh when people get, when they do these kinds of things. I can't help it when I do that stuff. So that's kind of fun. So why don't we dive into the book, and let's say people don't know who these characters and stuff are. You've got an introduction video, which I really like, talk about Alexander Graham Bell and all these other great characters that who could not figure out in the Boston Metaphysical Society universe how to take on the shifter. Why don't you talk a little bit, introduce us to the characters, and tell us what the story is about, the whole setup for this.
Bear with me here with my voice. Mm-hmm. The basic setup is Samuel Hunter had lost his wife to some sort of supernatural entity a number of years before the start of Volume 1. And he's been hunting it all this time. But the team of Bell, Edison, Tesla, and Houdini have also noticed something is awry, amiss in the world. And they realize that they and Samuel have been hunting the same thing. So they reach out to him to help in figuring it out. But of course, not everyone in the team wants him to be a part of it.
Okay.
And so that's how it all starts.
In the first few pages, we see the spirit photographer. He's not able to continue, let's say.
Not to ruin it for people, but her father dies in the first few pages.
Mm-hmm.
And so she, for money reasons, she wants to take his place with Samuel because the money's better. Mm-hmm. And he is very resistant to that. But he realizes he actually needs her in Granville. They know they need her to figure out what's going on.
What's her name again?
Caitlin O'Sullivan.
Caitlin loves someone. That's right. She is a Christian. I see a lot of people when they talk about the series talk about the diversity.
Yeah.
That was
important to me. I mean, this was originally a TV pilot I wrote many years ago. Mm-hmm. And even then, I didn't want a lily white cast. Mm-hmm. And this is a very American story. And mm-hmm. you really can't tell an American story without women and people of color because, well, they're part of our history. Mm-hmm. So it was important to me to bring certain elements and different points of view into the storyline. Mm-hmm. So we have Caitlin, who's actually from a minority group, the Irish, during that time period, mm-hmm. and Granville, who's African American.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the three of them, of course, you have to read the book to know how the three of them get together and do this good stuff. I'm kind of curious about, talk about Granville some, because he's the scientist of the bunch. And yeah. talk about what kind of science does he specialize in, as far as you've got a nice balance between, you know, the detective, the spiritual, the spirit photographer, and then you've got the genius scientist, as he's described. What kind of things does he bring to the team?
Sometimes he's the smartest one in the room every once in a while. Nice. But he'll bring a logic, and he does bring science. And I actually try to make the science correct whenever I can. And like when you get into issue 2, you really begin to see how he uses the science as they find evidence for this thing they're tracking. And, you know, it helps them to solve the case and helps them to destroy the bad thing. But yeah, and he also brings weapons to bear that can kill demons and other things. So he provides the tools that Samuel often needs to do his job. And though he often joins Samuel and the team out in the field as well.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting because, you know, if he's got a way to take down because I know many scientists, oh, no, that supernatural stuff, that's all bunk. But obviously, he has come to the understanding that's not all bunk. And he's actually been able to use science to take on these supernatural things.
Yeah, well, this world is predicated upon that supernatural things exist and that they're a normal part of these people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is not unusual. In the steam.
No, this is normal for the world. This alternate history, paranormal world that I've developed. It's just part of living in what I call the great states of America.
Very good, very good. Now I've got there's an interesting thing is I look at the cover. One of the things when talking about Granville, when you look at he's got a pair of goggles on.
Yeah.
And when I look at the goggles, it looks like there's a skull image in there. Is that
it's like a demon image.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's like it's a reflection of like a demon.
So it helps him see demons?
No. That was simply an artistic flourish for the cover. Yeah.
Okay. Because you also see in her camera, in her lens, there's a picture of something in there too. I'm not exactly
sure. it's like a demon or a wraith. It's also a metaphor for her taking pictures of supernatural things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very cool image, by the way. I do have to say I love the cover image. Really beautiful.
Yeah, Rebecca did a great job.
Just super duper. So the whole thing just really fits together so nicely, and it's so much fun. We've talked about this before, but I always find this really interesting, the business of world building.
Yeah.
And it must have been fun for you. In some ways, you made the universe the way you would like it to be, as well as close to our reality so we can relate to it. What was that process like for you? I mean, having things sometimes work out better than they did in our world and sometimes not quite as good. What was that process like for you?
I'm not even sure I can put words to it in that, you know, I started building this world piece by piece by piece while we were originally, when we were in production for the original 6 issues, I wrote short stories to develop canon for the series. And then just started thinking about the world and how it worked and how people related to each other and the politics and the social and the cultural and the technological. And, you know, I, you know, try to ground it in reality at certain points, because it helps the reader when we go off into the fantastical. So it's an interesting, you know, pick and choose as I go along, and if I think it will work out in the long run.
Now, one of the things in the story, it says that families known as the great houses controlled the economy of the great states of America, while the middle class and lower class's sole purpose are to serve the great houses.
Yep.
Is that sort of an interpretation of what goes on in the real world, or is that where did that notion come from?
Basically, what I did was take United States history and split it off after the War of 1812, which, by the way, we lost, though, even though all the history books will say that we won. We actually didn't. We lost to the British. But after that, in my fictional world, the industrial families got together and said, you know, we can't have that happen again. We have to have greater control. And they started eroding rights, people's civil rights, until they became, our government became essentially a parliamentary oligarchy, where we still have a Congress and a president, but it's elected through the great houses and nobody else votes. Only the great houses vote.
Wow. So there are no elections.
And so they completely control the economy.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Are there elections for president and stuff like that?
Like with any parliamentary government, the president is elected within Congress.
So it's almost British in the way that they
do. Yes. Yeah. There are some British overtones.
Do you prefer that kind of government to the American government as it is now? Or what do you think about
that? No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
It's just more interesting to go. It's fun to go places that we don't go in our world to see what would happen if that would exist. So it's a lot of fun to see.
Yeah.
Very good. So let's see. I always like to know if you have some real people in there, Alexander Graham Bell and all these other good folks. Are the three main characters in the society, are they based on real people as well, or are they your creations? Where did they come from?
Samuel and Caitlin are fictional. Granville is a historical figure. He was an African American scientist who lived during the same time period as Tesla and Bell and all the guys. He was originally from Ohio, but since I'm the writer, I brought him to Boston because, well, I can do that. The real Granville actually did sell some of his patents to Bell and to eventually Westinghouse. There's no evidence I could find that he actually knew Tesla or Houdini, but he definitely knew Edison because he sued Edison for stealing some of his patents and won. Edison did offer him a job, but he refused and started his own business with his brother up in upstate New York.
Because I've seen things about Edison and the way that he worked. He had like a house where he had all of his scientists go, and they like worked in there every day doing stuff. So that's interesting.
Yeah, he was a brilliant businessman. I mean, he recognized, you know, opportunity and, you know, how things could work in the long run. And I believe I'd have to look back. I believe he did invent some things, but he really saw where a lot of technology could go, and in some cases wanted to shut it down because it didn't fit his own business interests.
See, now you make me want to look up and find out who this guy really was.
Well, I mean, he did that to Tesla for a while. Mm-hmm. And I actually think that if Tesla had a modern day business manager, our lives would have been very different today.
Okay.
Because he was a terrible businessman, and he didn't really, he couldn't manage Edison. You know, he could barely manage himself, I think. So,
well, creatives and business. Well, even Edison had terrible, He lost. Didn't he lose a whole bunch of money, and then he had to start up another business in order to try to get more money or something like that.
Oh, I don't know, but that doesn't surprise me. But he still ended up ahead.
Yeah. So the other two characters, those are creations. Are they? They're not based on anybody that like real people, because sometimes what people will do, like I talk to people and they say, oh, I base these people on my friends. Are these completely characters that came from your imagination? Are they people you knew that you kind of put into the? Because I had a friend of mine who wrote a comic, and he put his friend in there. And what he did was, mm-hmm. he says, "Hey, you're going to be in my comic." And then when he read the book, he was surprised to find out he died. In the book. So are these people you know, or are people that you created?
Oh, I created them.
Okay.
Yeah, I created them.
Did they resemble physically anybody, or was that the work of the artist, or something that you wanted? How they looked?
Oh, like? No, the artist put together what I had told them, and you know, give them some reference material, but no, they're completely fictional and just kind of taken from originally what a generic American Irish girl would look like back mm-hmm. in the day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Samuel's going to, you know, same thing for him. Mm-hmm. And the very, you know, the looks and the clothes and everything are period accurate.
Okay. Very good. Now there is a huge steampunk audience. Were you aware of them? I mean, how have they reacted to your franchise?
Oh, very well. I've been doing steampunk conventions for 10 years, and it has been warmly received.
Wow.
So yeah, no, I love my steampunk contingent. I will actually be up when this ends. I'm actually going to be on the road up to San Mateo for Clockwork Alchemy, which is a small steampunk convention in Northern California. Mm. And that's where some of my very first fans came from. So I try to go to that every year.
Wow. Very good. Are there other cons that you do each year, or are you getting back into conventions more now that things are trying to settle back into normal?
Well, I've actually been doing conventions since the end of the pandemic. So, I'll be at San Diego Comic-Con again this year. Mm. I just finished up WonderCon a week or so ago here in Anaheim. I'll be doing StokerCon and American Library Association. I'm waiting to hear back from Rose City. And possibly I'm looking into doing Grand Rapids in Michigan.
Cool. I'm so jealous because I really want to go to WonderCon one year, because that's the one I haven't gotten to. I've gotten to San Diego. I've gotten to like Dragon Con and MegaCon and New York, which is my favorite, mm-hmm. and C2E2 and all these ones. We actually got to Seattle one year, which was really, I love that con.
Oh, Emerald City?
Yeah.
Emerald City's great. Yeah, I love Emerald City.
That's a great con too. So it's just, you know, it's great to be getting back into the swing of things and doing those kinds of things. I would recommend New York if you ever get a chance. I realize it's kind of other end of the country for you, but I would recommend it.
I actually did New York a few years ago when they did a modified version at the end of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So I was there. I think they only allowed like 50,000 people in.
Oh.
So I was there for that.
Great. Great. Have you ever gone to Dragon Con?
Yes, many years ago.
Oh, yeah. Because this would work perfectly in Dragon Con. This is just, it would be ideal. They have a parade. They have stuff going on 24 hours a day. I've seen many, many steampunk things there. People dressed up like steampunk. And
it's just, oh, yeah.
God, yeah. That would be a great place to go into it. So as far as what's going on, right? Obviously, the Kickstarter is keeping you busy. And let me just say again, it's going to reach this goal. You've already passed your goal, and it's going to get funded on Thursday, April 18 at 2:05 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Are there other projects you're working on, first in BMS and then other ways? What kind of things are keeping you busy these days?
Well, I'm working on a short comic for an anthology about, it's called Holiday Spirits, the monster version. It's going to be a Medusa story. That'll be fun. I finished the first draft of a new series for Lady Mechanica.
Wow.
I think Joe is working on the first issue of that right now. And I think he has to finish the other, a different story first, and then he's going to get to mine. And then as far as BMS, there's my artist is on hiatus for Pike's Peak, so got to figure out what's going to happen there. And I do want to finish the novel trilogy on the House Wars, which is my equivalent of this world's equivalent of the American Civil War. The first novel's done. I had gotten started into a novel 2 last year when my father passed away. And so being the executor, I had other things to do. So that's about wrapped up. So I hope to get back to that soon.
Okay. Well, that's good. But you keep busy. That's the thing. Because I know that you've worked in television, I always wish that this would end up on TV sometime.
We'll see.
I imagine you are, because you know people. You can talk.
I don't know that many people.
You'd like, well, maybe you get to know more as time goes along, maybe somewhere down the pike. Because this screams animation to me. On level.
Oh, yeah. For me, animation, live action would be great. Either one.
I would love to see this. Because there's so many. I mean, there's all these animated networks and stuff going on, and you've got other things. I mean, YouTube has their own bunches of animation things going on. This just yells out to me to be on there, to be somewhere on there. If you did new stories or interpreted the other ones that you've already done into animation, this would just work so well for that.
Yeah, it's a very deep world, so it can go a lot of ways.
Now, the one thing I don't want people to feel, because it's a very well-developed universe, that it's hard to access.
No,
and
it's not. Pretty much everything was written as a standalone, because I never know how people are going to come into the world. So I've had people start with the sequels and then come back to volume one because they actually didn't. They picked up the sequels at their comic book store. And didn't realize there was a whole an original miniseries, and they come back and get the miniseries. Or you can start with the novel or the prelude. I mean, or you can start with the audio drama. It really doesn't matter. They all work together.
Do you have like a timeline that's available for people to know where they're coming in as far as the BMS universe?
Yeah, it's actually on my website.
Oh, good.
There's a chronology on the website. Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay. I didn't see that on the website when I took a look at it. But why don't you tell people, by the way, what the website address is?
You can go to BostonMetaphysicalSociety.com. It will take you to myQueenOfMercia.com. That's actually my corporate overlord name that I use. but that's all me. And you can go there, and it's all there.
Okay.
I have to do a... Where is it? Let me go look. Character biographies, books. Yeah, if you look under the pull-down menu for books, at the very bottom it says story chronology.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Cause sometimes what happens is people don't, Ron Randall, who does Trekker, one thing I kept begging him to do, and he did it. I'm sure I wasn't the one he did it for, but he finally put out a timeline for his books, What Happens When. And boy, was I happy to see that, because I was a little confused at times what took place when. So those kind of things are very helpful to those of us who may be just new to the universe. I'm glad you're doing that, because I think people are going to really like that.
Yeah, that's why at the Kickstarter, we have a thing called a starter kit. For $38, you get the novel and the softback of volume one. And that will give you the foundation of everything you need to know.
That's one of the things about your franchise that I've seen people say, is that you're very fan-friendly when it comes to You know, fans understanding what you're up to and then the storytelling and stuff like that. You always have the fan in mind so that people can come in and really get to like it and enjoy it and pick up what's going on very well. I think that's a great thing, particularly an independent comic like yours is. Because some independent comics, I read them and I go, I have no idea what's going on. But this one, very easy to pick up and to know what's happening and get involved in the story. So I think that's something I've heard a lot of people say that. And I think that's really great for your
series. Thank you. The starter kit actually came from watching how people bought things at cons and realizing that, oh, if you buy this and this, this is going to give you the background and everything you need. So I kind of got it from how I was selling things at cons and then added it to the Kickstarter as the starter kit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you've already got, as we're talking, you've got six backers that picked those up already.
Yeah.
So that's very good. Now, hopefully there'll be a lot more of that because that's always a good place to start. And you've got lots of good add-ons and stuff like that. So there's all kinds of ways to get involved in the universe. And which one?
We have a puzzle for the first time.
Wow. How about that? Puzzle, coloring book, all kinds of good things in there for the whole family, really. I think it's mm-hmm. really, really great about that. So metal, you name it, you've got all kinds of good things in there. And I think that's really wonderful how that comes together. It's so rare to find in franchises that fans can really access and really understand and enjoy. So really, I think you've done a terrific job with that. So I think
thank you. I appreciate that.
So let's see. Once again, I would like to ask people to say, I don't say it enough. It's project is going to be funded by Thursday, April 18 at 2:05 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. You are right now, as we're talking, you are looking at $25,000, which is superb. You're heading for 500 backers too, which is just excellent. So super duper, and, you know, project we love, like we mentioned, all kinds of good things going on. All the stretch goals. As we're talking, you've met all six stretch goals. Are there going to be other ones?
Probably not, unless I think of something in the next couple of days.
Okay. Well, six stretch goals is pretty good, I have to say.
I'm happy with that.
I think that's really great. So it's good stuff. So all I can say is, Madeline, you do such a wonderful job. I hope other people are looking at your franchise and saying, you know, this is the way that you do it. Make fans and make new fans all the time, make fans happy and stuff. Really wonderful stuff. So just keep doing the great, the more success. I hope that this really just continues to go. Are there going to be Kickstarters coming in the future that you know of, or are you going to take a break?
Oh, there will be. I'd rather finish with this one first before we start planning the next one.
Okay. All these people I wish would do that. It's a very wise way to approach this stuff. So once again, it's Boston Metaphysical Society, Volume 1, Special Edition Hardback. And one last time, it's going to reach its goal by Thursday, April 18 at 2:05 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And I highly recommend it. It's a brilliant set up, brilliant world that's been built, excellent characters. It just is everything that makes a comic, you know, worth getting and makes me go to the comic shop. So all I can say, Madeline, is you're doing a great job, and all I can say is just keep it up.
Well, thank you very much. And also thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance. Zoop.gg is uniquely positioned as the full-service crowdfunding platform. Zoop provides creators and companies built-in streamlined support from start to finish, including campaign management, marketing, production, manufacturing, fulfillment, and more. And today I'm talking with one of the main leaders in Zoop.gg, and that's Jordan Plosky. How you doing, Jordan?
I'm good, Wayne. Thank you so much for having me on. Nice to speak with you again.
It's good to talk with you. The last time you and I talked was about 3 years ago when you were just getting going.
I think so, yeah. And in the meantime, thank you so much for having a whole bunch of our creators on to talk about their projects and their books on the Zoop platform. And I never want to, you know, try to outshine them. So I stay in the background. But, you know, this is one of those moments where it's time for me to come in and sort of be the Mick Jagger of the Stones, if you will.
Okay. Now, there's some – if you go to – let's start at the beginning here. You're a crowdfunding platform. But now you're crowdfunding the crowdfunding platform? Is that what's going on?
It's super meta, Wayne. We're getting this a lot. But it's all very I hate using the word, but synergistic. It just makes a lot of sense. Everything fits together for us because, yes, we are a rewards-based or a project-based crowdfunding platform. That is true. However, we are not set up with the SEC to legally raise funds for companies and sell securities. So what we're doing with what this is called an equity crowdfunding campaign that we're doing currently, Wayne. And with an equity crowdfunding campaign, instead of essentially pre-ordering a product, people who back our campaign are actually investing into Zoop and they become a part owner. They actually get shares in the company of Zoop. So instead of us going to angel investors or venture capitalists, we're going to our fan base, our user base that we've built up over the past 3 years, the comics community, the crowdfunding community, and going to those people who've been supporting us for the past 3 years and saying, hey, if you like what we're doing, now is the time for you to really be a part of this and keep help us keep doing what we've been doing and grow. So I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, the thing I'm interested in is because you guys have been largely a comics crowdfunding platform, but there's a video if you go to this republic.com about Zoop. There's a video on there that talks about the fact that you want to branch off into other things like games and other comics related areas. Talk a little bit about that. What is it you're trying to move into?
Yeah, absolutely. From the start, we love comics, first and foremost. I'll talk to you about the New Warriors all day. We could talk about Image Comics from like 1991, 1992, Bronze Age comics. You know, that's my sweet spot. So myself, my co-founder, Eric Moss, I'm the CEO. He's the COO. We are co-founders. We have a third co-founder as well, who's our CTO. But Eric and I are really the comic nerds. He's a huge Quasar fan. He worked at IDW for a while. But realistically, we know that in order to grow, we need to do more than comics. And we have other passions and loves too. Toys, for example, action figures, statues, these are all categories that we can get into. Games are huge, and that's everything from board games and tabletop games and even video games. You know, we also see a ton of creators out there. And this is the thing, is we want to be able to help creators, right? It's not just helping comic creators. That's what we love, and we'll continue to do that. We'll always be doing that. But I think if we can get more eyeballs in different categories, then that helps everybody. You know, a rising tide floats all boats. But we have many other categories that we're looking into, but there's always going to be that connective thread of sort of that, like, that geek love for collecting, for this sort of genre. You know, basically, our overall purview is the full Comic Con audience, not necessarily just comic books. So anything that you'd find at Comic Con, that's what we love. That's what we want to play with. We're not here to do any sort of like high tech potato peelers that have nothing to do with you know, the fun stuff that we love. So we'll leave the technology kind of campaigns to other platforms. But if it has anything to do with, you know, sci-fi, fantasy, cosplay, you know, fun stuff that we all love, that's really what we're looking to do.
Okay, so you're going to continue to do the comic stuff the way you're doing it, but you're going to add new focuses to it. Is that what's going to happen?
Yeah, and it's going to take some time. I mean, we came into this with a lot of contacts and connections and a bit of a reputation in the comics industry already, so that gave us a little bit of a head start. But we have some people that we're talking with right now in these other categories that, you know, we could start seeing some new types of projects coming in. I mean, look, one of the first projects that we did was a puzzle for The Rocketeer. So that's, you know, even though it's a comic-related IP, we didn't do a comic campaign for it. You know, we did another project that was for a tarot card deck that was based on a comic book, but there was no comic element to that campaign. So we've already dabbled in you know, some slightly different categories than comics, but it's all related. It all kind of starts from that core of comics. So we're not going to get too crazy. We're not going too far off the beaten path, but we, you know, in order to grow, we need to expand.
Mm-hmm. So this is going to be, are you bringing on new staff? Are you like updating software? What kind of things are you going to do with this money?
Yeah, quite a few things. So number one, you may notice that on the campaign page at republic.com/zoop, one of the first things you see is our logo. And it says Concierge Crowdfunding and e-commerce platform. Now, let me explain the e-commerce platform side of things. Very soon, can't reveal the actual release date of this, but we are going to be releasing a V1, a version 1 of our e-commerce platform. And this is essentially trying to help solve what happens after a successful crowdfunding campaign. Where do these creators continue to sell their books? They don't. It's the same reason why we chose the full service model for crowdfunding, because it lowers the barrier to entry. Realistically, these if you're a comic book creator and you love to write or you love to draw, you don't want to handle dealing with printers. You don't want to handle packaging, you know, hundreds of books and sending them out. You might not understand how to run a campaign on your own. You might not want to be the person trying to book yourself on interviews and get press coverage for your project. So we come in as this built-in team, and we extend that all the way over to e-commerce as well. So it's a white glove solution. So Wayne, think of just, you know, a Shopify store. If you were to have a Shopify store, you need to learn how to build that store yourself. You need to maintain that store yourself, learn all the technology for it. And then every time an order comes in, you're going to have to run to the post office and ship out a package. So we take all of that off the creator's hands for crowdfunding and very soon to be for e-commerce as well. So that's number one, is building out from this V1 into a more robust system for e-commerce. Number two, we do have a new hire. We haven't announced him yet. I'm kind of keeping that one in the chamber for a little bit, because when you run a campaign like this on Republic, you need to keep having steady ammunition of new announcements. So once that announcement comes out, I'll be sure to let you know who we brought on and what their role is. And we do have one more initiative that I can't really discuss right now, but that's going to be something big and interesting, I think, in the comic space, in the crowdfunding space. I think it'll be quite newsworthy. And Wayne, I'll definitely let you know when we're ready to announce that.
Okay.
So those are the three top things. And then one last thing to your point. Yes. Improvements on the technology. Absolutely. So that's again, bringing on more development, I should say a larger development team to handle, you know, how do I put this? Just the expansion of the Zoop platform, let's say.
Mm-hmm. So it's still going to be a website, basically.
Yeah, we're not going to be an app, if that's what you're asking.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that sounds good. Now,
yes, still a website, still web-based for sure.
Okay, because people are going into apps a lot these days, but I think that you got to be careful when you're an app, because not every phone seems to work with every app properly, so you got to be real careful about those kinds of things.
Yeah, so, and not every business needs their own proprietary app.
Mm-hmm. Now let's talk a little bit about it's on republic.com/zoop, and we're recording this, of course, a little earlier, and as we're recording it, you've got about 80 days left to invest, and of course you don't want to wait, even though you've got time, This is not the time to wait. It's time to get jumping on it and going. And as we're talking, you're just about to hit $100,000 raised from a pretty good number of investors, looks like. So it looks like the goal, if I'm reading it correctly, is $1.24 million.
Well, so this is different than regular crowdfunding. So if you see there where it says 1.24 million max goal. So that means that we are set up with the SEC. You know, we had to go through financial audits. We had to go through a bunch of legal documentation in order to even get accepted to do something like this. But once you do all of that, you are allowed to raise up to 1.235 million. So while that's listed there on the campaign page, that's not our actual goal. That's just stating what we're allowed to, the amount we're allowed to raise up to. Now, you could also jump through more hoops and kind of go through more, what's the word I'm looking for? Well, due diligence and audits and whatnot, and raise up to 5 million. We don't need that kind of cash right now. So the 1.235 million is perfect for us, but I do need to like say that it's not all or nothing. So it's not like if we don't hit 1.235 million that we can't take this money. If we hit 200,000, 300,000, we are good to go. So I just need to make clear, it's not all or nothing. It's not if we don't hit 1.24 million, we get nothing. We've already surpassed the point where we're allowed to withdraw funds. So anything from here is a victory.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. There's some interesting things on here that I noticed. There's a minimum and maximum investment that somebody can make.
Yes.
Which I find it. So anybody can kind of come in that name. Now, the minimum investment is a little, compared to like other crowdfunding things for like comics and things, it's a little more than what we often do. It's the minimum investment, according to the website, is $150.
That is correct. Yes.
So that's a pretty conservative number for people who like to invest. I mean, I've seen investment websites and stuff, and they're looking for a lot more than that. Now, on the other end of things, the maximum investment, which you can make, which I won't be able to do, I'm sorry to say, it's $124,000, I guess you can get from one contributor, I guess, or investor.
That's correct, yeah.
Is that standard for this kind of thing, or are these unique to Zoop?
So the maximum amount, there's nothing that we can do about that. I think that that's an SEC-regulated type of thing, where only one investor can only go up to 10% of the overall offering through equity crowdfunding. But the 150, that was something that we discussed with Republic and thinking about like what would be that ideal sort of minimum. And that's what we kind of decided with them. They thought maybe 200 and, you know, we wanted 100, and then we kind of compromised on the 150, because we wanted to make this available and affordable to anybody. And yes, it might be more than backing a typical comic book campaign on Zoop or another crowdfunding platform. But again, you're not getting, you know, a comic or a book. You are investing. You will have a piece of ownership. You will have shares in the company. And as the company grows, your shares should increase in value. So think of it that way, as an investment as opposed to a purchase. But okay. Wayne, if you keep scrolling down, you'll see the more you invest, we are offering physical perks as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so, bonus perks you receive a over a public comic at the 250 level. 500, you can get other things as well. 1,000, 2,500, 5,000, 10,000, 25. Now, people get mad at me because I never say this soon enough. The deadline, according to this website, is June 13. So I want to keep that in mind. Some people are procrastinators. I know I sometimes don't get into it as fast as I need to. The thing you want to be aware of is June 13 is the last day you can be involved in it. So the thing you want to do is you want to make sure you don't get to that deadline. Do it as soon as you can. As soon as the money clears the bank in your account, you might want to think about it, because the sooner you get involved – like you said, if the shares increase in value, your investment goes up.
Well, and here's
something else. You earn more money.
Wayne, I very much appreciate you saying all of that. Number one, yes, we absolutely would love everybody's support as early as possible. Just like in regular project-based crowdfunding, you want to see as much momentum at the beginning of the campaign as possible because nothing attracts a crowd like a crowd. So if you are considering supporting us, which we very much appreciate, we just ask if you could do it as soon as and as quickly as possible. The other reason for that is just like Zoop crowdfunding, there are early bird specials for the Republic campaign, and it's slightly different. You know, we're talking about the value of your shares increasing. So if you are a part of the first 300,000 to invest in Zoop, you get a 15% discount. So what that means is we are valuing the company of Zoop at $6 million. So when you get your shares, that will be based on a $6 million valuation. However, if you come in early, you're going to be coming in at a $5.1 million valuation, which means if you put in, let's say, $200, you'll be receiving $230 worth of shares in the company at no extra charge. So kind of a nice incentive for people who are looking for value for that type of investment.
So how do people keep track of shares? Is this going to be like a, you're going to send physical paper copies? Are there going to be electronic versions? How are you going to do that?
This is, everything is electronic. Republic kind of takes care of all of that. So I don't have much more of an answer because I haven't seen behind the scenes of how those mechanics work, but everything is electronic. People have accounts in Republic, and that's kind of where you go for all the information and updates and you know, quarterly reports and everything like that.
So it's really good kind of things going on. Now, we should talk a little bit because there's a couple of highlights I thought that were kind of interesting to point out. Number one, there's $2 million in funds processed with 15% revenue. So yeah. You earned 15% of $2 million because of the funds you processed.
You know, that's lifetime. Yes, but realistically, that number is probably a little bit closer to 20%. In the past year or so. When we got started, we did a lot of discount work in order to get some names on the platform. So that kind of works against us, but that, you know, we had to be accurate with our reporting. But yeah, in 2023, we were much closer to a 20% profit margin on that. So yeah, I think we're doing all right.
Well, there's another one, too, that I think that's really interesting to point out. It's 130-plus campaigns with 88% campaign success rate.
That's correct.
A good number. That's an excellent number, you know, for when it comes to crowdfunding and stuff like that. I have many friends who would like to have had that kind of a success rate when they ran crowdfunding campaigns. So you're off to a great start. In 3 years, you've achieved what many other places have not.
Thank you. Wayne, I very much appreciate you saying that. You know, you take a look at Kickstarter, for example, and granted, we don't have the volume that they have, but you know, their comics category, and I may be off by a couple of percentage points. So if anyone's hearing this, I'm not trying to disparage or anything, but I think they're about somewhere in the 72 to 76% success rate for the comics category. Now, Kickstarter overall in every category is closer to like a 40% success rate, which is pretty crazy that it's below half.
Right.
So, yeah, I think we've gotten off to a great start. I think that the support that we provide our creators is the difference maker there, right? Because they're not going it alone. They have advice. They have information. They're not just throwing, you know, something up against the wall and hoping that it sticks. We're guiding them. We're helping promote, which is also something that Kickstarter doesn't do. So, yeah, I mean, when you have a built-in team that's also invested in your success as a creator, then we're going to work together to make sure that you cross that line.
Mm-hmm. Now, see, one thing I understand, and I've talked to folks who have done Kickstarters, they often have, like, I don't know how to describe them, like affiliated organizations that do some of the things that you do, but they're not part of Kickstarter. You have to bring them in, work, learn their stuff as well as doing the Kickstarter stuff. And there's multiple organizations that you have to kind of pick from and figure out how you want to do all that. But I don't know. I think I like the way you do it, all under one umbrella. I think that, you know, I don't want to keep track of multiple phone numbers and multiple people to try to figure out now, because inevitably what's going to happen is somebody's going to say, oh, that's not us. Talk to somebody else.
Totally.
But you don't do that. You've got everything under your roof. And I think that, to me, that is a massive change. How many times have I called Microsoft and said, your software is not working? Oh, well, that's not the problem with us. You got to go to X, the people who made your individual software, because we don't have anything to do with that.
And that's probably by design. But
I throw things at the wall when I run into that. I just am so mad about that. But that's why I think your situation, I think, is one of the best ones because, you know, when you call Zoop, you are very likely to get an answer right away.
100%. Yes, 100%. And one other thing that I want to add to that is we only get paid on the back of a successful campaign. Whereas when you piece together a team like you just described, you're most likely coming out of pocket and you have to pay these people cash before you even, you know, start your campaign, because a lot of the work happens before you even launch a campaign. That being said, now you're paying someone out of pocket, which means you're going to micromanage them to make sure that they're doing what they need to do. Right? So you kind of traded one stress for another. It's like, I don't want to do marketing. I'll hire someone else, but then I'm going to be on top of them all day, every day. With us, because we get a percentage of the campaign, we are incentivized to bust our ass, because the more money the campaign makes, the more money we make. So we become a partner in success. And then that saves that headache and that saves that time and worry of having to oversee someone, because you've come out of pocket and you're like, all right, I got to make sure that, you know, the money I'm spending is working for me. So that's a huge thing. And our clients and the creators that we work with love that.
It interests me because I hear about these things, but I don't know much about them. These other organizations, are they specifically for comics, or they do like socks and or machinery or other stuff? Because, you know, the strengths you guys have is you are largely, you know, you understand the industry like few others do. And so to me, if I was having to recruit these other little organizations, and what if I find out that they don't necessarily, I might be their first comic client, and they have to figure things out, which is just, you guys have figured all that stuff out. And that's what I think makes it so clean and green. And when I interview people about Zoop, they often tell me this is such a huge development for them, because they're creators. They want to create.
Yes.
And they really love the fact that you guys can steer them in the right direction. You can get things done for them in the best way possible. And so I just think that's great. I would be mystified trying to assemble a team of all these things, trying to figure it all out.
Wayne, the amount of time that it takes, right? Let's say you want to try to hire a marketing person. All right, I have to research, you know, 5 or 6 different outlets to see who's right. Then I have to contact them. Then I have to wait for them to get back to me. Then we have to have that first call. Then I have to negotiate pricing and figure out, you know, timing and all that stuff. It's like we just bypass all of that for marketing, for printing, for fulfillment, you know. So it's repeating that over and over and over again. Everything's already in place. We say we save months of time for creators. And as we all know, time is money. So end-to-end solution, that's what we do. We make it easy.
Well, see, and again, you understand comics. I just don't think these other organizations and other places are necessarily going to understand the industry like you guys will.
There might be a couple people out there that do this specifically for comics, but I don't know that they're also going to sit there and package your packages for you as well. You know, they might be able to run the campaign. They might be able to do the marketing, but there's very few people, if any, out there that are like that full suite of services that kind of cover all bases for you.
Mm-hmm. It's really good, because one of the other highlights I wanted to be sure we talked about was that you have high profile clients, and that includes like Conan the Barbarian, the Rocketeer. I could name drop a whole bunch of People I've been dying to interview for my podcast, and you serve them up to me and say, can you talk with this person and stuff like that? I go, oh, boy, you bet I will. Because like the Jorge Molina, I think I was a great interview, which it's so hard to talk with artists because they're used to thinking visually. And my podcast is being an audio only thing. I have to be sure to ask the right questions to get an audio answer that gets the right answer for them.
Interesting. But
they're very good at that. And Jorge was one of my favorites since he comes immediately to mind. All kinds of people, Ron Mars. Oh, I just got his book recently, which I'm still enjoying reading. I'm going through reading it a couple of times. There's some really great stuff. I did notice, I think you guys have put up a store.
Yeah, so that's that e-commerce platform that I was talking about earlier. So We have – let me see where we're at with that right now. I should take a look.
Because I saw the Whistling Skull book.
Correct.
Was out there, which I ordered, and I'm grateful to have because I enjoyed reading that. And when I saw that, I said, ooh, I said, hopefully they ordered a couple extra that they can sell because that's a fun book. So, that's a great one.
Yeah. Honestly, that book came out gorgeous as well. You mentioned Ron Mars's book, Resolution. I got that recently, maybe in the last couple of weeks or so. And Oh man, I think that book came out looking just beautiful. So, But yes, back to the store though. Whistling Skull is up on the storefront right now. I think we're going to have a few more products up there before we kind of announce it to the world. But yeah, I mean, if someone wanted to order the Whistling Skull because maybe they missed the campaign or they're fans of Tony Harris or B. Clay Moore, come on over and grab the book. It's available here and only here. It's basically still exclusive to Zoot. And we plan on populating this with many more titles as well.
See, that to me is a big thing because not everybody has the money when the campaign is running. You know, you get a car breakdown and you got to take care of that. You can't really spend money on anything else, but you still want the product. And when the car is taken care of and you get a little extra money, you're going, I wish I could still get that. And so that's something I think that is a huge benefit, which other crowdfunders I don't think have at all.
We think so too. Some of them do, but you know, there's not a storefront. You have to go to the individual campaign page. It's a little bit more difficult, I think. It is available, I think, on both like Kickstarter and Indiegogo. I think you can still purchase product after a campaign is over. I don't necessarily know exactly how they do it or who fulfills it or like how you know, the creators get notified of an order. But no one else is going to have sort of like a storefront or a marketplace. Think of Comixology, right? That's a marketplace for digital comic books. We want to be a marketplace for crowdfunded projects that have wrapped and that are still looking to continue to sell their product online.
Can I bring up another high-profile client that you guys had that I got to talk about was the Jack Kirby Museum?
Oh, yeah.
Which I loved talking with them about it, and I loved all the kinds of things that they were doing and stuff like that. And I just thought that was the kind of thing that I just think is wonderful to have. See, there's a name that I want to see more in comic circles is Jack Kirby because I loved his stuff. So that was one of my favorites.
Everybody's right. I mean, he's the king. But those guys. They work with the family or, you know, they have certain rights to certain, you know, Jack Kirby content. But, you know, the same thing, they're busy running a museum. They're not necessarily crowdfunding people. So they needed support, but they wanted to put this book out. They wanted to go direct to consumer with it, you know, which is what crowdfunding does. You know, they weren't necessarily looking to pitch to publishers and try to go that route. So it was a perfect fit. For a project like that. And we were thrilled because this is the first ever Jack Kirby related crowdfunding campaign. And we get to say that we did that on Zoop.
Yeah, it was so great. It was so great to talk with them, I do have to say, as well. So much fun with that. Now, I've got a couple of questions before I let you go. A couple of other statistics. Numbers is never my good thing, so I've got to ask about this. 22,000 registered users.
Yes.
Who are those people? Are those like the clients? Are those like customers? Who are those people?
Yeah, those are customers. Those are people who have signed up for an account on Zoop.
Wow. That's a good number of registered users, I have to say. That's a lot.
I think we're doing quite all right. And then if you're looking at the number right next to it, you know, those people have made over 25,000 purchases on the Zoop platform. So, proud of that. You've
25% repeat customer purchase. That's a good number too.
That's a fantastic number. If you ask any, you know, startup founder or any small business, you know, about what their repeat customers are, 25% is a fantastic number. So very, very, very happy with that. Sorry about the humble brag there, but yeah, very pleased with that number.
There's a chart too. I think people ought to take a look at the competitive analysis. Compares you guys to various other ones. It's interesting because you don't realize all the functions that you provide compared to other places. I thought other places provide much more than they do when I look at this stuff. So I was like, oh my goodness. It makes me wonder why so many people still do use Kickstarter, but well, they've got a reputation they've built over time. And I think you guys will surpass that as time goes along, I think.
Wayne, as they say, from your lips to God's ears, my friend, I appreciate that. But yeah, for people listening, Wayne is just he's on our equity crowdfunding page, republic.com/Zoop. You could see all this firsthand. You could see, you know, the competitive analysis, all of the services that we provide versus a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo, or even if you compare the e-commerce, you know, with Shopify or Etsy, all the things that we do that they don't do. And that's our competitive advantage in the marketplace. You know, we had the luxury of coming out after Kickstarter, after Indiegogo, and seeing what holes needed to be plugged in the model. And that's kind of where we came in, is seeing like, hey, crowdfunding is good, but it could be better. And that was our goal when we started Zoop.
Well, I have to say, I always tell people this about crowdfunding, is that I wish it had been around a lot longer than it has.
Yes.
Because I think how many stories did we miss reading because DC or Marvel or even Image wouldn't pick it up?
That's so. I use this term a lot, Wayne. Crowdfunding democratizes the marketplace. There's no more tastemakers. There's no more gatekeepers. There's no more having to, you know, get approvals from editors or publishers. And even if you do get a story approved, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to make it to the shelves, right? So this bypasses and saves creators tons of time of, you know, doing these pitches or even having to network and go out there. If you have a crowd, if you have a fan base, there is a legitimate financial model to put out your own work nowadays, and that is crowdfunding.
Mm-hmm. I have to tell a quick story. A roommate of and I had, were putting out a comic, and we submitted it to one of those gatekeepers. I hate that word. At the moment I hear that, I start there. I feel my temperature start to rise.
I know. I feel that has a different meaning, a little bit different meaning nowadays than how we're using it. But
well, the thing that we did, we submitted it, and then we were turned down. And we were not turned down because it was a bad book. It was a great book. But they said we had to have a company behind us that they recognized they wanted to work with. And so what happened was we came around and we found somebody, and it breezed right through because they liked the company. And to this day, I spit tax when I think about that whole business because – you know, if we hadn't, you know, put our fishing net out and found somebody that they liked to work with, it would never have gotten printed. So this is the thing I think crowdfunding to me is, and what you guys are doing is so good because there are a lot of people putting good books out there that a lot of people haven't heard of. And I think we need to get the word out more, not less. I think that crowdfunding should be even better. I think that there are changes happening in the industry, and I'm not convinced 10 years from now it's going to be like it is now.
I'm not a doom and gloom kind of guy, but lately I think I may agree with that assessment, Wayne. So, I mean, look, I will say I think comics is a healthy industry. I just think that the model might be changing slightly a little bit with the internet and with people ordering literally everything online nowadays, you know? So... Mm-hmm. And the fact that you don't need a major publisher in order to put something out anymore, that's, I think, the biggest key is you can do it yourself or do it with a company like Zoop, for example. You know, that, I would still consider that doing yourself, by the way, because, hey, even for all the services that we provide and we sort of act like a publisher, we're not a publisher. We take 0% ownership of that IP. Mm-hmm. So the creator still maintains 100% rights. They're not giving up anything to a publisher in order to, you know, get their book out there without any really guarantees of sales, for example. But if you work hard, if you are able to promote, and that's another big thing, Wayne, is it's not enough just to be a writer or an artist. There's got to be someone on your side that knows how to promote. Because if you can't get out of the basement, nobody knows how great your stuff is. And that's a right. huge lesson for any entrepreneur, any creative, independent contractor or freelancer. Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people out there who, because of the way that the industry is now, they can make their own comics and get them printed. And
absolutely. Oh, it's easier than ever, right? I mean, with Photoshop and all the digital art programs and scripting programs. I'm not a fan of AI. I'm not recommending that by any means. But I just mean that, you know, technology has certainly made creation easier. You know, you don't have to find the right pens and the right paper, you know, 11 by 17. You don't have to have stacks and stacks. And, you know, anyway, you get what I'm saying. It's finding collaborators, right? Mm-hmm. Like with the internet, it's easier than ever before to find people to, you know, actually create comics with.
It's funny to me because like the comic that I worked on with my roommate, all the creators have never been in the same room. One was that lived on top of a mountain in Tennessee. We lived in Florida. The colorist lived in the Philippines. But what happened was Richard went around and found all the people that did things the way he liked it and put that team together. But the book was great. We got lots of great feedback on it. But the thing that's really interesting to me is that sometimes I wish we could get people to shake hands and face-to-face say hi to each other. Sometimes that'd be kind of a great thing to have happen. But
one of these days.
I mean, you guys did the Ukraine support book, The Complete Saucer Country, which I love that book. I thought that was such a wonderful book. And there's so many others we could name drop in the time. But and you guys are just getting started. In 3 years, you're just getting, you know, with 88% campaign success rate, that's got to attract a lot of people, I think, because there's a lot more where that came from.
Absolutely. Look, I hope so. I mean, you know, to the names that come to mind that we've worked with, you know, Howard Chaykin, Dan Panosian, you mentioned Paul Cornell's Saucer Country. He's coming back for another campaign called Who Killed Nessie? That's on our coming soon slate. You could see that on the website. We have upcoming campaigns from Christian Ward, who just did his own Batman series over at DC. That guy's awesome. Adriana Mello, who's an artist, was on Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy, big DC artist as well. We're doing an art book with her. And then, yeah, you know, that Comics for Ukraine campaign, we had work by Alex Ross, Art Adams, Bill Sienkiewicz, Walt Simonson. I mean, like some of the names that we've, you know, been in contact and gotten a chance to, you know, be associated with and work with is insane to me. Wayne, it's, you know, like the kid in me is like dying inside.
Well, another thing I want to point out too, on that same page below some of those things, there's testimonials from people. My favorite one is Jason Copeland says, "They are good, ain't they?" that's a funny thing to say. And all different people, the Nightcrawlers one, I just got that book recently. Rachel Distler talks about how the Zoop team is great and things like that. So there's all kinds of good people. Of course, Guillermo del Toro, there's a name for you.
Right.
all kinds of good people. And so, you know, these are kinds of people that if they're coming to knocking on your door and stuff like that, that's a good sign. So I'm real excited about Zoop. I have been ever since I first heard about it. I said, this sounds like a really good company to do things with. And that's why I've been glad to work with you guys and kind of try to bring attention when I can and more eyes, hopefully, to your stuff. Before I let you go, is there anything else you want to tell people that they should know about the campaign?
Hey, if you love comics, if you love crowdfunding, we appreciate your support. Any amount is cool. I guess any amount over 150 is cool with Republic. But the more you invest, the further your money goes. get in early so that you get that discount. If you come in at least $250, you're going to get some physical perks as well. We appreciate any support. If you can't support financially, please help spread the word. We're doing this because we want to reach out to the community, to the fan base, in order to keep this going and to do it together with you guys, because that's really what we've built up here over the past 3 years. So republic.com/zoop. Our website is www.zoop.gg, and you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at We Are Zoop on all of those platforms as well.
I'm going to be signing up for this stuff. When I cobble my money together, I'm going to get in there and invest too, because it's certainly worth it. And you guys do a great job at Zoop, and Jordan, just much success. And I hope this exceeds even your high and lofty goals for this for you, so that Zoop can get even bigger and even better.
Wayne, I so much appreciate your support over the past few years. You've been incredible to us, and I just want to publicly say in front of your entire audience to thank you so much for everything that you've done to help Zoop grow, and I look forward to working with you for the next 3 and the next 30 years.
Well, I always like to say it's easy to support quality, and that's certainly Zoop, so thanks so much.
And vice versa, Wayne. Thank you, man.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.